Thanks, Ian, and I want to compliment Abby on having done what was really a terrific job on such remarkably short notice. I also want to thank my former colleague Cynthia Bodie Willis for inviting me, and my current colleagues Gib Parrish and Dave Ross of the Public Health Informatics Institute, with whom I am working on some of the concepts that I'll be discussing today. As Ian said, I'm going to be discussing assessing current realities and achieving the future promise of electronic health records for U.S. population and public health. And specifically, I'm going to be doing four things. First, I'm going to start with some overview thoughts for those of you who don't have the patience to sit through 15 or 20 minutes without slides. Then I'm going to quickly define some basic terms, because I found that regardless of how self-defining terms seem to be, we all seem to have our own self-definitions of them that are not necessarily shared. Third, I'm going to provide you with a quick overview of some of the promises of EHRs, or electronic health records, for population and public health. And then finally, I'm going to conclude with some realities, some questions that we need to confront in the U.S. if EHRs are going to fulfill that promise. So, three key points I am going to make during this talk, and essentially these are my three conclusions. First of all, when it comes to the potential of electronic health records in this country for population and public health, it's important that we maintain a sense of healthy skepticism, of really healthy skepticism. According to iHealthbeat, the current market for EHRs in the U.S. is roughly $2 billion a year. I think that's a real underestimate. And it's going to grow. The market is going to grow by roughly 18% a year until 2015, when they project it to be a $6 billion market. Again, I think that's an underestimate. In 2009, EHRs had penetrated roughly 12% of U.S. hospitals, comprehensive or fully functional EHRs, and about 17% of office-based physician practices. So it's pretty low penetration and pretty low coverage. Political pressures, professional pressures, and personal pressures accumulate in the U.S. to make us optimistic about the potential of EHRs for population and public health. At the same time, I think we really need to realize that EHRs need to be fit for purpose. EHRs can do a wonderful job of improving the health of an individual. Perhaps they'll do a wonderful job in improving health care. That doesn't necessarily mean that they will do the same thing for population health or for public health. We need to ask ourselves, essentially, where's the evidence base? What's the evidence base for thinking that EHRs, for example, are going to increase life expectancy in the U.S. from our currently roughly 35th international ranking to, say, the 10th or 11th ranking occupied by Canada, or the first place occupied by Japan? What's the evidence base for thinking that EHRs are going to reduce disparities? For example, the disparity in life expectancy for men between the 65.9 years in Holmes County, Mississippi, and the 81.1 years life expectancy for men in Fairfax County, Virginia. That's a huge, obviously, it's a huge disparity. It's a 15-year disparity in life expectancy, two different counties in the U.S. Are EHRs going to help us bridge that gap? So one summary thought is healthy skepticism. A second summary thought is country specificity. We need to understand that the potential role of EHRs for improving population and public health are going to vary from country to country. They're going to play a different role in Singapore than in England. They're going to play a different role in England than in Canada. They're going to play a different role in Canada than in the U.S. A third summary thought is that we have to recognize, and this is really a corollary of the second, the policy, the political, and the health system context of EHRs. And in thinking about the promise, we need to ask ourselves some key questions. And if there's time, if I don't get the hook, I'll address some of these questions at the end. But for example, Is access to health care universal? Or is EHR coverage universal on a geographic level? Is there universal health insurance? All of these things, all of these questions, and the answers to the questions are going to determine what the potential is in an individual country for EHRs for population and public health. Let me continue by providing you with three quick definitions. First of all, electronic health records. According to the International Organization for Standardization, the ISO, the EHR, particularly the Integrated Care EHR, is a repository of information regarding the health status of a subject of care in computer-processable form, stored and transmitted securely, and accessible by multiple authorized users. It has a standardized logical information model, which is independent of EHR systems. Its primary purpose is the support of continuing efficient and quality integrated healthcare, and it contains information which is retrospective, concurrent, and prospective. In other words, EHRs are not just isolated bits and bytes of data. EHRs are not just immunization records. EHRs are not just lab data. EHRs are not just notifiable disease data. EHRs are a longitudinal portrait of individual health that's interoperable, that's shareable, and that's needed to provide clinical care. ISO talks about sharing EHRs at various levels, physician to physician, physician practice to physician practice, in other words, horizontally, vertically, physician practice to hospitals, physician practice to central health agencies. Population health. We define population health as the level and distribution of disease, functional status, and well-being of a population. In other words, population health, as John Last would say, is the goal of public health. Public health, on the other hand, the practices, procedures, institutions, and disciplines required to achieve the desired state of population health. So when I talk about public health is essentially the means. Now, in the US, EHRs have some really wonderful potential for population health and public health. EHRs could, in an ideal US, develop and provide greatly expanded, clinically rich measurements of the level and distribution of disease, functional status, and well-being, and especially around chronic diseases and health risks, data that we do not now have. Having said that, EHRs will be providing it for patients. And patients are not necessarily all members of a population. EHRs also could help us to build geographically based population health records. Records that are extremely important that we don't have in this country, that fully portray the health, the well-being, the disease, and the determinants of health of geographically based populations. Now, how about the future promise of EHRs for public health itself? We think of that promise of EHRs for public health as basically through four processes: a push, a pull, a pushback, and then what we talk about as a joining of hands. A push means essentially improved surveillance data, data pushed from clinical repository of EHRs to a health agency. For example, better notifiable disease reporting, better reporting of sentinel diseases and conditions, and especially better reporting on chronic diseases and risk factors. A pull from the repository, whether it's virtual or real, of EHR data maintained at a central level, at a health agency level, for developing improved public health guidelines, improved community health assessments, and especially improved analyses of the intersections of clinical care and public health. So we have data pushed from the clinical level to a health agency. We have data pulled from that repository at the health agency. And then, most important, we have data pushed back, patient-specific data, pushed back to the clinical encounter. Patient-specific data, which is essentially a personalization of screening, diagnostic, and treatment guidelines, patient-specific electronic alerts and clinical reminders for public health, and patient-specific decision supports. Finally, in this process, we have the joining of hands. And by the joining of hands, what we mean is after the push, after the pull, after the push back, we have what Roz Lasker, what Kerr White have talked about as the integration and improved coordination of public health, and particularly public health case management, with clinical services. Now, realities. There are realities that we have to confront in this country if EHRs are going to meet their potential. And as I said, that the promise of EHRs varies for individual health, it varies for healthcare, it varies for population health, and it varies from public health. And I just want to repeat this point because it's very important. You can have EHRs that are wonderful at the clinical level, but do not necessarily do anything at the population health level. And whether or not that translation is made from the individual level to the population health level is going to depend on answers to roughly six questions. And these are questions that need to be explicitly dealt with in the conversations about EHRs. And the first question has to do with EHR coverage, EHR penetration, as we used to say in the health insurance world. Does the EHR universally cover all people in a practice, all people in a given geographic area, and at what level? Without universal coverage, we're going to have trouble making population level estimates. We're going to have a lot of trouble, particularly if we don't have the equivalent of measures of non-response bias in surveys. Second issue is identifiers. Is there a unique population or health identifier? And is it for an individual practice? Is it for an individual accountable care organization? Or is it geographically based? And is there only one unique identifier per person? The HMO that I used to be a member of was one of the pioneers in EHRs, and the joke among many of the practitioners, I won't mention the name of the HMO, was that that particular HMO liked unique patient identifiers so much that every patient had at least two of them. Third, standards. Can the current clinical model for standards be expanded to include standards for the kind of information that we need in public health on chronic disease risks and on the broader determinants of health? Can the, for example, despite the current brouhaha of our primary care physicians asking about, do you have a gun in the house? Can we have standards for questions like that? Third, transmission of data. Is comprehensive EHR content transmitted to a central health agency, or is it only the bits and bytes of, for example, immunization data or notifiable disease data? Fifth, storage, aggregation, and analysis. Are the data going to be stored, again, either virtually or physically, at a central health agency repository or in a central repository that's accessible by a health agency? And finally, public policies regarding and organizational agreements regarding privacy and data sharing. This is something that has been struggled with for years in Canada and England. In both of those countries, there has been a real commitment, particularly in England, where they've got a much more positive context for using EHR data for population and public health, but they have been struggling for years on privacy protections and individual opt-outs. And those are, it's a difficult question. So thank you. Let me just repeat my three summary thoughts. One is healthy skepticism. The second is country specificity. And the third is the policy, the political system, and the health system context. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dan. We have about 15 minutes for questions, so please raise your hand, and if you have a question, please introduce yourself and wait for the microphone. While everyone's getting their questions together, I have two. First, Abby, you were talking about how the county health rankings could drive policy, and I was wondering if you had gotten any feedback from local organizations that have used the website and what they use it for and what was their outcome that they were trying to assess. Mm-hmm.
So this is the question that we've been spending a lot of time thinking about, and you know, for one of the other things that you will find on the County Health Rankings website, you know, is exactly this: testimonials, stories about, you know, what communities are doing, how they have been able to translate that data into action. You know, one of the stories that we have come back to, because I think it's just a great example of what is possible, is work that's happening in Wyandotte County, Kansas. And this is under the leadership of Mayor Reardon, you know, really engaging all sectors of the community and coming together, you know, for that broad conversation about where do we as a community want to go. And really taking a look at the assets and the existing programs in the community. And bringing them together so folks are taking advantage and building on the synergies that are in place. So, you know, they have an effort to bring new supermarkets to the county. So there's a fresh fruit financing initiative taking place. There's a real focus on early education. There's a real focus on, you know, the Promotora model of working with at-risk populations and populations that are oftentimes socially isolated. So again, you know, they're looking at this from a very holistic perspective. And I think that's one of the big takeaways. And they're looking at that broad systems change. So it's not just an intervention. It's not just a health education fair. But it's thinking about what are those sustainable changes and what are those policy changes that's going to leave that lasting change in the community? So, you know, I think that's one community. We know that there are plenty of others that are taking action, and we have been doing a lot of work to try to capture those stories because I think there's a lot to learn from this.
Thank you. And Dan, I have one for you, too. You talked a little bit about having healthy skepticism about EHRs, and I was wondering if you could talk a little about the evidence base that is out there on how EHRs can affect population health, and if there isn't any, where should we start in building them?
As far as I know, the evidence base is really lacking, and it's lacking for very good reason, which is EHRs. I think England at this point is closest, probably, well, of the Anglophone, of the English-speaking countries, England is furthest along. And England still has not solved the connection between using EHRs at the clinical level for primary care, where they have very high penetration, and moving those data to the national level on what used to be called the national spine there, or the summary care record. And that effort, unfortunately, and they've been working on this effort since the late 1990s and invested a huge amount of money. But that effort of building the summary care record and populating the summary care record has really faltered. And so, I mean, England is really, it's a very sobering example. And in England, you've got a national health identifier, but it's a very sobering example of successful use, apparently successful use, of EHRs at the individual level, but not being able to really move from that level to the population health level.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions? Just in the back.
Hey, Carlo Di Florentia, you're in psychology at UMBC. Just a couple of quick questions. One is, any concern on the county, for the county level data, about the what Dr. Benjamin said about the quality of the data? And I wonder if you could say a little bit about that. And on the EHRs, is there any efforts to do some standardizations? Because part of the, we're doing an intervention in the, even in the clinical level, the data isn't useful because it's not accessible, because it's not, the systems are built in ways that are very different. Each of the providers provides very different kinds of programming, and then if you want to incorporate something, it's very difficult to get it into the record accessible to the doc in a very easy way. So I wondered if you, if there was any effort to kind of try and standardize and try and get some of that done. Thank you.
So our colleagues at Wisconsin have taken painstaking efforts to ensure the quality of the data that, that is in the reports. You know, a couple of notes on that. You know, I think folks would like to see something beyond just state reports, because that's the way that they're structured now. There are actually 50 state reports. And that was, you know, one step in ensuring that quality, recognizing that a lot of the data sources we had were not going to be relevant across state lines. So that was, you know, one way of ensuring that quality on a state level. You know, I think the other thing that I would point out here is that, you know, in some cases, the measures that are used behind the rankings might not be the best fit. And in some cases, it's certainly not a suggestion of, you know, that is exactly what the community should address. But it is the data point for which we have the best quality data to really, again, make the case for paying attention to education or paying attention to poverty. And I think for us, it's that reminder of, you know, having the high quality data in place, but it is not, it is certainly not to replace any local data that a community certainly is working with, because there are limitations. You know, again, going back to that logic model, this is about starting that conversation and being that call to action. So,
Dan?
I'm going to just riff for a minute on what Abby said. I mean, you know, the data at the county level are really good data. And the folks at Wisconsin and the folks who've worked with them at CDC have gone to a lot of effort to, where necessary, aggregate over years to make the data more stable. I wouldn't worry about that. It's a lot more of an issue when you try to drill down, because for most people, you know, counties don't necessarily mean much. And when you get down to a town level or a city level, it's more of an issue. But the data that they've got up there on the counties, on the county level data, are really good. In terms of the standards, there is a group called the Public Health Standards Consortium, which has done really yeoman work, notable work, on trying to develop standards. They and CDC are represented at the HL7, the Health Level 7 meetings. Certainly the meaningful use regulations are moving very much in that direction, although again it's pretty limited right now. And also need to acknowledge the Indian Health Service, which has been together with the Veterans Administration and Department of Defense. Indian Health Service has really been a national leader, and when other countries look to the U.S., they look to IHS and they look to DOD and VA in terms of the work around electronic health records. And one of the things that the Indian Health Service has done, or is trying to do, that's really notable, is expand those standards for a variety of risk issues, risk behaviors that aren't typically coded. So yeah, there are movements in that direction, but it's a very good question. That's a long way to go, particularly if we're going to move beyond the low-hanging fruit of immunizations, of lab data, et cetera, et cetera. So.
Thank you. We have time for one more.
Hi, I'm Chris Kinnebrew with the National Network of Public Health Institutes. I have a question specifically for Daniel. I read that Google Health and I think Microsoft Health Vault and maybe, I know Revolution Health was another company, and it seems like all these private sector efforts are kind of failing or just closing shop. Do you have any comments on how that, I mean, not that those were going to be huge opportunities for community health, but just maybe how those decisions of those major technology companies might say something about the challenge for what we're talking about here?
Sure. Who uses Gmail in the audience? Okay. Well, me too. And what Chris is referring to are basically personal health records maintained in the cloud. And I love Gmail. I mean, it's just been terrific for me. And at the same time, every time I send a note or get a note, I've got there in the little right-hand frame. A bunch of ads, and whether it's for an ad for informatics training or an ad for nursing informatics training or an ad for whatever, it's quite remarkable the rapidity with which they can parse your emails and provide you back with highly personalized opportunities for spending money, the crash or the abandonment of the Google personal health record in the cloud, which was just announced, I think it was this week, is really interesting because one of the things that I wonder about that is the extent to which those privacy issues. Or perceived privacy issues may have had to do with people not signing up. Around 10 years ago, I had cancer. It wasn't a big deal. I lost my prostate. One day it wasn't there anymore. And I started getting these spam about Viagra and this and that, and at first I was saying to myself, oh my God, how do they know? And then I asked my wife and she said, oh, I get those too. So I wonder if one of the things that's happened, particularly with Google, is the power of their parsing your searches and your emails may have had a negative impact on those cloud-based personal health records. And at the same time, I think there's a huge potential, ultimately, for these personal health records.
All right, well, thank you, everyone, and please join me in thanking our speakers.